This is Recon number 2 of the Play Board Games Better podcast, Seven Wonders. Hi, I'm Rich Shea. Seven Wonders is a very popular new game. I think it will also be popular as a tournament game. Each game plays quickly, and it scales very well from 3 to 7 players. One of the benefits of its structure is that a 7-player game takes about the same amount of time to play as a 3-player game. There is no downtime as players draft simultaneously. I actually played in one of the first tournaments of Seven Wonders at the just-completed Total Confusion 25. Seven Wonders was one of the New England Regionals title events. The tournament was won by Brian Feldman, son of my longtime gaming buddy, and occasional voice on the podcast, Joel Feldman. For each round of the tournament, we played 2 games and summed the scores. Because we did not all have much experience with the game, we played Game 1 on the A side and Game 2 on the B side, randomly distributing the wonders for each game. There were 3 heats. A win in any heat advanced a player to the finals. With more participants, a semifinal round would have been required. We did not use the actual rule for setup, which would have had A and B sides in the same game because 1. We weren't convinced the A and B sides are evenly matched. 2. The cards are sleeved, so the A and B sides can be told apart from the back. As with all recons, I assume you are familiar with the rules and we'll go over the resources and choices available. You have 18 plays divided over 3 ages. Typically, 15 will be playing a card and 3 will be burying a card for each stage of your wonder. While it is possible that completing your wonder is not the best strategy, there are a few compelling reasons for you to complete it. 1. It's a significant number of victory points. 2. You are probably planning how to do it from the beginning of the game. 3. Burying a card that you don't want to pass on will be a great move several times in the game. You can also turn in a card for 3 coins. This is usually a desperation move. Either you really need the money, or you are just not going to pass on certain cards. Just remember that 1 special power retrieves a card out of the discards. A less obvious fact about the game is that it is a different game, depending on the number of players. Analysis of the cards will concentrate on that, but first I want to point out the biggest difference. As the number of players change, the portion of the deck you get to choose from changes. The proportions work the same way for each of the 3 ages, so I'll go over just 1 of the ages. In this podcast, I'll be rattling off lists of numbers as the values vary for the number of players. If your attention span is less than 5, I know mine is, you can see all the numbers summarized on the page for the podcast at playboardgamesbetter.com. It's 5 different games. For 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 players, there are 21, 28, 35, 42, and 49 total cards. Each player will see a varying number of those. It's complicated by the fact that the remains of hands you passed come around to you again if there are less than 6 players, and there are an increasing number of duplicates of some of the cards in all games of more than 3 players. Each player will see 18, 22, 25, 27, and 27 again cards. Some you may see twice, but I didn't count them a second time. This works out to be 86%, 79%, 64%, and 55% of the cards passing through your hands. Getting the cards you need in a bigger game is mitigated by the duplicates, but the odds of not seeing a card you want go up as the number of players goes up. Conversely, the ability to block another player by burying a critical card is diluted as the number of players go up, both by the addition of duplicate cards and the smaller proportion of the cards that you will see in a game. The military structures, naked aggression. The most obvious strategy is to pound your neighbors with superior military force. Military affects everyone's score. Players will score from -6 to +18 for military. It is the only way to directly inflict point losses on your neighbors. When they pay you for resources, they give up a point for every 3 coins they pay, but I'm sure their nefarious plans involve recovering that loss and more. To get maximum points, you need to build more military cards than your neighbors. But why would they let you do that? So you will also have to bury military cards you can't build. The distribution of cards, not shields, across all ages is not proportional. When there are excess cards, they are most numerous in age 3, then age 2, and most even in age 1. For 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 players, there are a total of 9, 13, 17, 20, and 25 military cards. That's 0, 1, 2, 2, and 4 in excess of an even distribution. Also note that there are only 3, 4, and 4 different military cards in each age. That limits any player to that many military units of that age. As a practical matter, more than 5 total in a game is probably excessive. You need some other points, too. Resource structures. Get them while they're hot. There are two types, brown cards, raw materials, and gray cards, manufactured goods. It's easiest to discuss the gray manufactured goods. In a 3 and 4 player game, there are 2 of each of the 3 items, one set in each of ages 1 and 2. The 5 player game adds one more set. The 6 and 7 player game adds a fourth set. Some of the wonders require 2 of the same manufactured good to complete the last step. But those cards have built-in production of one of those already. No other card requires more than one of each kind of these goods. It is sufficient to have access to one of each for any purpose. The 3 forum trade cards also produce any one manufactured good each turn, but only for the owner. The other resources come in 3 flavors: single resource cards, 2 of the same resource, and 1 of 2 different resources. The double and choice cards cost a single coin. The singles are free and only available in age 1. There is one of each in the 3-player game. A second ore and lumber are added for 4 players, and a second stone and clay are added at 5 players. Because they have the same names, you can only grab one of each of the single resource cards. This is also true of the manufactured goods. The choose one of a pair cards are also in age 1. There are 6 possible combinations, and one of each is available in the 6-plus player games. Lumber stone and clay ore are in the 3-player game, making one of each resource, but only 2 cards. Stone clay is added for 4 players. Lumber ore completes a second set of all the elements for 5 players. Lumber clay and stone ore complete the possibilities for 6-plus players. The 2 of the same cards are added in age 2. There is one set in a 3-player game, and 2 sets for 4 or more players. The caravansary in age 2 is the only other resource producer. You may need up to 4 of a single resource to complete a wonder's last step. Some age 3 cards cost a shopping list that includes 3 of one resource, plus 1 each of some others. A few guilds require 2 pair of resources, but no other card will need multiples of more than one resource. The palace requires 1 of each of the 7 different resources. That would be a real 7 wonder. The key point is to get your resources early, or at least get the ability to buy them cheap. Keep an eye on your neighbor's production if you have to make hard choices, and you will. With only 13 production cards in a 3-player game, you should get about 4, which, along with your wonder's own resource, still means you probably can't make every resource. Just make sure you can build the cards for your strategy with the resources or by chaining builds. In a 3-player game, all the resource cards are available for purchasing, even if you don't own it. As the number of players increases, there is a rising possibility that one or more resources will not be available to you at all. This can seriously hamper your strategy, especially in age 3, when the card costs are complex. The wonders. Your wonder provides a mere one resource and then demands you arrange for multiples of specific resources. On the A side, there are 10 total victory points, and a useful if not essential capability. The B sides of the wonders are much more variable. Each wonder produces a different one of the 7 resources in the game, and it is the same for either side of a wonder. If it produces a manufactured gray card cost, you will need access to a second one of the same kind to complete the wonder. For the raw material cards, you will need the one on the wonder for at least one stage. The first stages are built of two identical raw materials. Two require two wood, two require two brick, and three require two stone. None of them requires the mineral cart. The second stage never matches the first, and is two or three of one raw material. The third stages are four identical raw materials, except for the statue of Zeus, probably a commentary on its weakness, or two identical manufactured goods. These always match the resource on the wonder, except for Zeus, who seems to get a bargain in each case. The B-sides are much more variable, which is why I don't think mixing A and B-sides in a game is fair. Further play could show I'm totally wrong on this. Building the first stage of a wonder is the preparation for the later stages. The small number of points, or benefit, would seldom be the best card play on its own, but combining the need to bury rather than play a particular card with the benefits of the other stages, you will often build the first stage in the first stage. The second stage gives a tangible benefit and will probably be your best play at some point. The third stage is strictly a matter of asking yourself each turn if you have a better play to make. At some point, you will probably not have a better play and complete the stage, but don't feel compelled to do it. It's time to start talking about victory points, because now they come out. Side A has 10 victory points for each, except the pyramids, which has 15. Each player will probably get their 10 or skip the last stage to do better than 7. Side B varies from 3 to 25 victory points directly. Many of the capabilities translate to victory points by the end of the game. The civilian structures, blue victory point only cards. These are the most direct way to score points. It is difficult to max out on available points here. Spread out across the three ages are 13 different blue cards, 12 in a three-player game, for a maximum of 58 points, 53 in a three-player game. The total points for blue cards in a game are 55, 63, 81, 99, and 122 for 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 players. This averages out to 18, 16, 16, 16, and 17 per player. This is not a big change for the different game sizes. An important point is to get your share of the blue cards. They are fairly easy to build, and not only do you get the points, but your neighbors don't. If you can chain a few together, it will be significant. Building an average value in blue cards is worth about as much as complete military dominance. One decent building over the average makes up for a lot of military blunders. While many of the blue cards are available by building the predecessor, most of them are not very expensive anyway. The Pantheon is the real bargain if you build the temple first. The palace requires one each of the 7 resources and is the hardest card to build in the game. But for 8 points, it is always a good idea to build it if you can, or bury it if you can't. The blue cards are boring compared to the others, but don't neglect them. If your neighbors do, then go heavy in blue. The commercial structures, money and resources for the thrifty, and maybe a few victory points. These cards are all about money. In the first stage, they are discounts on purchases from your neighbors, and there is a 5 coin card. In the second age, they are resource cards or coins based on your and your neighbor's resource cards. In the third age, they are bonus cards with coins and victory points for your own brown, gray, or yellow cards or completed wonder stages. The yellow cards are always free and always helpful, except for duplicates. There are 9, 13, 16, 22, and 28 in 3 to 7 player games. So each player averages 3 of them. There are 4 kinds in each age. You could accumulate 12, but that is a lot of space to give up for not many points, so add them cautiously. The arena, however, can be a huge card, especially if you have the pyramid on side B. The science structures. They are do-the-math cards. I think the science structures are the hardest cards to use effectively. If you get to build a big pile of them, you will score quite a few points, but missing just one card can throw the scoring off a lot. You build up slowly, but if you get one set or a triple, that is 10 or 9 points. For 3, 5, and 7 player games, there is one set of all 3 cards for each player. There's an extra gear card in the 7 player game, and in 4 and 6 player games, the last set is short a gear. Scoring with science structures is all about imbalance. You can only score big if other players are not trying to get green cards, leaving them for you. For example, if you get the average of 4 blue cards, you will get about 16 points. 4 green cards will only get you 16 points if they are all identical. You need 7 or 8 to get a very high score with the green cards. The guilds. They're the wacky bonus cards. The guild cards are the most variable, and you can't really plan for them. Out of the set of 10, the number included will be 2 more than the number of players. Even in a 7-player game, one card will be left out. 7 of the cards score based on what your neighbors have done. There is one for each type of card, and one for lost tokens. The lost tokens card has the highest potential score, 12 if both of your neighbors have been beaten up the whole game. The other 3 are about you, or you and your neighbors. Scoring for wonder levels has a high likelihood of being 9. It would probably be the highest scoring single card in a game. The shipping guild scores for your own brown, gray, and yellow cards. The scientist guild is a wild green card, and in the right circumstances can score a few points. But for most players, it will be the weakest guild. How many points are in a game, and how do I get them? Money is highly variable in all the games I've seen. Once money enters the game, it only leaves to purchase double raw material cards. So it will be victory points for someone. Everyone starts with 1 victory point, 3 coins, and about half of the folks pitch a card once for 3 more coins. So add a half a point per person. I think the double or choice resource cards will cost about 2 coins per person in a game. Trade just moves money around, but wonders and yellow cards add more. There are between 11 and 17 coins per person from yellow cards. The average increases with the number of players. These figures are rough because pitching or building a stage with a yellow card that pays is probably a good move for someone, and many of the card payoffs depend on your neighbor's other cards. You don't want to pass the Chamber of Commerce to someone with 2 or 3 manufactured goods. The wonders only change the average a little. For Side A, only the Temple of Artemis gives coins. 9 for Stage 2. So it's 3 more points or nothing. Side B has 2 wonders that give 7 and 12 coins respectively. There are about 4 to 6 victory points per person for coins total. That turns out to be about 4 to 6 victory points per person for coins total. That should only vary by 1 point either way, even adding for the wonders and subtracting for buried cards that occur. What I have seen so far is that most players end up a few points below average, and 1 or maybe 2 in a big game players end up with 8 to 12 points in coins. It's not a complete strategy, but keep an eye on the money. It's how you score points indirectly by selecting resource cards wisely. Military dominance is the first strategy that occurs to players. It has 3 limits. You can at best get 18 points for it, or a 24-point swing in a 3-player game that you dominate. You are in an arms race and have to pass up other juicy cards to play or bury military cards. You can't even allow the possibility of parity with your neighbors. The whole strategy will fall apart after you have invested heavily. Failure in an arms race means you get no points or lose points. Every other strategy gets at least some points for every card played. You can only lose the benefit of cards already played for military cards. In a more than 3-player game, the players that are not your neighbors benefit from you starting up a military struggle unless it spreads over to them. That doesn't mean a military strategy is bad. It just has high risk, and you also need points from other scoring. All strategies have the risk that the other players will not pass the cards you need, but that is also bad for them unless they will benefit from them. I have the total scores for the pairs of games in the Total Con tournament. It's not a detailed analysis, but it gives some idea of what you need to win. One thing that seems to emerge is that the winning scores and the range between high and low drop as players get more experienced. In the finals, the winning 2-game score was 98. In the heats, it ranged from 109 to 122. The total points scored in a game drop for everyone as players learn to play defensively. No single color strategy can guarantee victory, although if you manage to build all 13 blue cards, that would probably do it. Red-blue is probably the most economical strategy, but your opponents will see it coming, and that will make the blue cards even more appealing to them. Red-green has the benefit of being less profitable for the other players to counter, as grabbing a few green cards from you is less helpful for them. Then they might not want to get involved in an arms race if that would spoil the strategy they have in mind. If a winning score is 50 or more, then each of your 18 card plays needs to earn 3 points. Although the resource cards may earn you coins, those four or more cards need the other cards to pick up the slack. That means non-resource card plays need to average four or more points. So a three-point play is suboptimal. But many card plays can't do better than that, especially in Age 1. That's the challenge. I hope you will comment back as you develop your own strategies, and we'll see if a consensus emerges. Thanks for listening, and I hope this adds to your play and enjoyment of this great game. If you'd like to suggest a game for a recon, you can email me at playboardgamesbetter@gmail.com or leave a comment on the podcast site. Thanks a lot, and watch for the next episode.